If anyone had told me when I was 16, 17, 18 years old in that neighborhood that at one point in your life you would start enjoying bluegrass music, I probably would have laughed at them at that point. But over the past few years, I have grown, I don't know to be a fan, but certainly to appreciate it more than I used to. There's one song in particular that is an old favorite of bluegrass bands that's called Keep on the Sunny Side of Life. In fact, I've noticed that even in the past year or so, there has been some company that has adopted that song kind of as their theme song within their commercials and such. It's one that's been around, and I don't know any of the background of that song. I have no idea who the original writer of that song was. However, I just have a very strong feeling that he had some biblical insights when he was writing that. As we think about that message, as we think about that idea of keeping an optimistic attitude, of being happy in life, that is a theme that runs very consistent with the Scriptures. That's a theme, in fact, that God has said we need to be looking for. He's wanted a people, always, who were optimistic in their outlook, not a people who were saying behind every silver lining there must be a cloud. It's easy for us to grow negative. It's easy for us to grow pessimistic if we're not very careful. I think that, as we'll see this morning, is one of the things that can happen to us if we're not careful. This morning, what I want us to do is to talk about how we need to be as God's people. As you and I consider what He has done for us and what He does for us each and every day, that really you and I can know something better than medicine, that you and I can understand that God desires and expects of each of us to have a merry heart and to understand that that needs to permeate just every aspect of our lives. As we consider this topic this morning, I want us to begin by noticing something that happens. Anytime there is a command of God, anytime there is something God has told us to do or told us to be, Satan is going to be right there seeking to do away with it. And in fact, as we think about being merry, of having this kind of attitude that God desires of us, what Satan has attempted to do is to pollute that idea by giving us things to cause us to stray from that. Things that he desires for us to be merry in that God has no desire for us to take part in. In fact, as we consider that idea, I suppose as we look at our generation, as we look at the country in which we live, one of the things that Satan really has convinced a number of people can bring merriment is the idea of self-satisfaction. The idea that we can prosper, that we can build up, that we can gain, and in that, we will find our happiness. Note with me a man who didn't live in our generation, but perhaps could describe many who do. Over in the book of Luke, chapter 12, I'm not going to read this entire parable of the rich farmer. I think we are basically familiar with that. But I want us to go down to verse 19 and note the attitude that he exhibited. Luke chapter 12, looking down to verse 19, as he's pulled in his crops, as he's had a bountiful year, here's what he has to say. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Doesn't that describe how many people believe happiness is found, that merriment is found? If you can build up your bank account, if you can get a bigger house, if you can have a fleet of automobiles, if you can have all the stocks that are earning what they need to right now, that's where merriment is going to be found. I think you and I can look at the broken lives of so many and see that that is a deception that Satan has given us. Then if we are depending on wealth, if we are depending on our own self-satisfaction, then we forget about God. We start thinking about what we have done, what we have accomplished, as this man did. And in such, we simply find a shell of what true happiness is all about. Satan has attempted to deceive us in that way. I think as well, Satan has tried to deceive us into thinking that if we pursue sinful things, that's going to bring happiness. We do ourselves a great service when we realize that sin is tempting. I think sometimes we try to, in some way, convince ourselves that sin is, it has no appeal to us, that there's nothing in it that really we desire, and that's just wrong. We place ourselves in danger when we feel that way. If there were no temptation for us there, then what would be the pull? What would be the draw to that? And in such, what Satan tries to convince us of is that ungodliness is actually the way that we find true merriment. That's the way we find a merry heart. Look over to the book of Revelation chapter 11 with me. This is a scene pictured of the earth thinking basically that godliness has been defeated, that the things of God have come to nothing. And I want us to note how they are pictured here as they make merriment over these things. Revelation chapter 11, looking down to verse 10. Here John writes and says, "And those who dwell on the earth and rejoice over them, make merry and send gifts to one another, because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth." As he pictures godliness and the idea of these prophets bringing the message, here they are in this vision, they've been destroyed, they've been killed, and the earth is throwing a party about it. Why? Because Satan convinces people that if you are pursuing ungodly things, that's the way you find true happiness. Well, now let's take a look at that. How many people do we see who have given themselves over to the world who are truly happy? I don't know that I really even ought to mention this woman from the pulpit, but I'm going to because I think it makes the point very well. This week, we've been hearing about Anna Nicole Smith, haven't we? All over the news, just like a president had died or something. You look at the life of this woman. You look at her background, what she's been involved in, the kind of marriages, the kind of affairs that she's had. Was that happiness? Would any of us say, "I would gladly trade my life for what she had"? I don't think anyone in their right mind would. Despite the fact that there was glamour on the surface, despite the fact that there may have been this appearance of fun and happiness, no. We see in her death just what can happen when you pursue things of this nature. I believe as well that Satan sometimes tempts us to the wrong types of merriment with what we might just term as reality escapes. While God desires for us to be happy, He has never said, "Just pretend there's nothing wrong." But I believe we are like that many times. That what we do, kind of like that proverbial ostrich with his head stuck down in the sand, that we just kind of want to ignore everything around us, pretend it's not happening, pretend there's nothing bad there. That's not merriment either. Just pretending that things don't exist, that there are no problems, that won't find happiness. I believe Solomon tells us that long ago, writing in the book of Ecclesiastes, telling us ideas along this line. Let's look over to chapter 7 of his book, and there we'll read the first 6 verses. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Several ideas encompassed here in these verses, but I believe this one will come out as we read it. Verse 1 of chapter 7. He says, "A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. This also is vanity." If you and I pretend there's no problems in life, we never want to confront that. We never want to think about death. We never want to think about hard times. We never want to think about serious, solemn thoughts. There's no merriment there either. That's a fake kind of peace. It's a deceptive kind of happiness. And again, God has never called on us to be unrealistic. Now let me tie one in with this idea as well. I believe a way that we are seeing more and more that Satan is leading us into the wrong kinds of merriment is through distractions. And what do I mean by that? And there's a number of things we could talk about. But in our society, in our day and age, with the advancements that are being made in medicines and such, I believe more and more we are being tempted to cloud our mind with intoxicants rather than really to face the things that are truly happening. That we have this temptation now to put within our systems things that will cause us basically to be distracted from what's going on in life. Really, that's nothing new. In fact, as we look at the writings of Solomon, once again, backing up to the book of Proverbs this time, we go to chapter 20, familiar passage that we look at quite a bit, where Solomon is warning us about the idea of intoxicating ourselves to the point of trying to escape reality, of having a distraction. He says, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." We have problems with illegal drugs. I believe we have problems with the legal ones as well, don't we? We know that alcohol is one of our legal drugs in this country. We know that there is a tendency now for doctors to prescribe medications almost to distract us from the things that really we need to be facing in life. God has never wanted a happiness based on artificial means. He's never wanted us to escape reality, to find these distractions just simply so we don't think about perhaps the more serious and somber things that we need to dwell on. I say all of that simply to say, let's be careful. As in everything, Satan is polluting, Satan is trying his best to lead us away from the ways of God. But with all of that now being said, let's talk about God's command to be merry. It's kind of an unusual thing, isn't it? That you would actually give a command, that God would give a command to be happy. We oftentimes think about happiness, merriment, as an emotion, and certainly it is. But God desires that our emotions be fully under our control. He has never wanted the emotions ruling us, but always we ourselves ruling our emotions. And God has given reason beyond measure why we as a people belonging to Him not only can be happy, but must be happy in the things that He's done for us. When we consider these things, we just need to think about what it is that God has done. As we look throughout His Word, we find that even with the people of Israel, there were times when He was saying to them, "Don't you understand how good you have it? Don't you understand just how much I have done? Don't you understand the merriment and the happiness that can be found because you belong to Me?" Note with me over to a man who certainly knew sorrow. In fact, we sometimes nickname him the weeping prophet, don't we? But in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 30, I want us to note here what God is speaking through His prophet. Jeremiah chapter 30 is here. We're in the dark days of Judah's heritage. Notice what God has to say to them. Jeremiah chapter 30, looking down to verse 18. Here Jeremiah writes this: "Thus says the Lord, behold, I will bring back the captivity of Jacob's tents and have mercy on his dwelling places. The city shall be built upon its own mound, and the palace shall remain according to its plan. Then out of them shall proceed thanksgiving, and the voice of those who make merry. I will multiply them, and they shall not diminish. I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small." I imagine it was difficult to be a good person in these days. We look at Judah, we look at the time period that Jeremiah is prophesying, how evil, how wicked it was. Despite this, though, God says, "Consider what I can do for you." Do you want to know how to be merry? Do you want to know how to be happy? Despite the fact that it looks like your world is crumbling around you, trust that I have a better way. Trust in the fact that you have seen My glory before and we'll see it again. The psalmist over in Psalm 126 basically gives us the same idea. As he talks about the things that God can do and has done, in this song of ascents, the ones the Jews would sing going up to the temple, he starts in verse 2 with the idea, and he says, "Then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with singing. And they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them." We might add verse 3 too. "The Lord has done great things for us, and we are glad." God said to Israel over and over and over again, "If you want to be happy, consider what I've done for you. If you want to be happy, look and see how I have proven myself over and over to you." But that message is not reserved just for Israel. That message wasn't just something for His people of long ago. As you and I consider these thoughts, we can see that what God has done for us should bring that same type of merriment to our lives. Look with me over to John chapter 16, to the words of the Lord as He's speaking here. And I want us to note what He has to say. In John chapter 16, look with me down to verse 30. John chapter 16, looking down to verse 30, He says, "Now we are sure that you know all things, and have no need that anyone should question you. By this we believe that you came forth from God." And then the words of the Lord here. Verse 31, "Jesus answered them, 'Do you now believe? Indeed, the hour is coming, yes, and has now come, that you will be scattered, each to his own, and will leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world.'" Does Jesus say, like the old song goes, "Forget your troubles"? No, He doesn't say that. He doesn't say ignore the things that are happening around you. He says, He doesn't say pretend that the world has nothing bad to offer. He doesn't say, you know, just kind of escape from those realities of persecution. No. He says, "Trust in me, because I'm overcoming the world. And if you look at what I have done, then you understand what I can do for you." God says, "If you want to be happy, consider what I've done for you." And tying right in with that, we look for the reminders of God's goodness. As we look at our everyday lives, there are things every day that should bring us happiness because we know that God is there. Look back to the book of Proverbs for just a second here. Over to chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15. Two different verses I want us to look at within this chapter. First of all, looking down to verse 13. Proverbs chapter 15. Looking down to verse 13. He says, "A merry heart makes a cheerful countenance, but by the sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken." Look on down with that to verse 15. He says, "All the days of the afflicted are evil, but he who is of a merry heart has a continual feast." As we think about those verses, and in particular verse 13, you and I have to decide which side we're on. As we look at our heart, is it the merry heart that's making the cheerful countenance? Or is it the sorrow of the heart that's breaking our spirit? As we look to verse 15, if our days are afflicted with evil, which they will be, as has been for every righteous person on the face of the earth, do we have the merry heart that is basically feeding us the kinds of things that get us through life? I tell you, we look at our physical blessings in this generation, and how could we ever doubt that God cares for His children? The things He provides for us, the physical realities that He's given to us of prosperity and peace and freedom. But even much more than that, when we think about the feast that He's given to us spiritually, how could we ever have a woe is me personality? How could we ever go around saying how terrible things are, how bad things are? Oh, life's going to throw us problems. We know that. And the very fact that we're trying to do right when we have an enemy who's trying to turn us wrong, we know bad things are going to happen. But every day if we look, God is giving us a reason to find the merry heart that He has promised that we could have. And what that means is that we can look past our present difficulties to better things ahead. When we think about the things that are thrown at us, the hard things, God says you can look past those. In fact, just a chapter or two over in Proverbs, chapter 17, down to verse 22, He says, "A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones." How did Abraham leave a comfortable home to become a nomad, living year after year with only a promise of a great generation, but seeing no children born? How did Noah survive in the ark? How did David stay faithful when being chased by Saul and his army? We could go on and on, couldn't we? It's this verse. They had a merry heart. They said, "We know things are bad, that there are things around us, but we will not let that break our spirits." Because you see, when we allow the tempter to break our spirit, he's done his job. He's broken our heart. He's made it where we will not look to God to get through the things that we're finding difficult. In all of these things, God has given us ways to find a merry heart. And as we consider this, I want us to understand that pessimism and faith simply will not mix. We cannot be a faithful pessimist. As much as that might be a temptation to us, we simply cannot. If we are a person who is always dour, always looking on the bad side of things, always pessimistic. Now we need to understand the difference between pessimism and realism, don't we? As I've said before, it's not this false idea that everything's rosy, everything's going to be fine here. But we're optimistic of better things, aren't we? We know that God will get us through it. And it's that kind of pessimism I want us to understand simply is contrary to God. God has said a merry heart is an established part of our faith. That if you are going to be the kind of Christian, the kind of faithful Christian you need to be, it must be based on the merriment of your heart of knowing that God is with you. And that is so intertwined and interconnected with what we're called on to do. Let me give you just a couple of illustrations of that. Think about that as we consider our giving. When God calls on us to give, look with me over to the book of 2 Corinthians. See if I can get that to come up. 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And I want to know what the Apostle Paul has to say in this section. You'll recall that Paul has asked them to be generous, benevolent, and they're giving to these Christians in need. He's coming to take up this collection, to send to these Christians who are in need of it. And notice what he tells them in verse 7. He says, "So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity. For God loves a cheerful giver." There's our connection. Here is where faith and a happy heart combine. He basically says, if you are not wanting to do this, if you are not happy to give of your means to these Christians who are in need, don't do it. Just don't do it. God says any time we give, whether it be to a collection such as this, whether it be when we pool our resources as a local congregation, whether it be a private donation I give to someone who's in need, God says, do it with a happiness. Why? Because you see what God's done for you. Let your heart be merry because you understand that you are able to return only a small portion of what the Lord has done for you. Notice as well how that's connected within our singing. Going over to James chapter 5, where we were reading earlier. Note once again the passage that James tells us here in chapter 5, verse 13. He says, "Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? What? Let him sing psalms." I tell you, in the past 16 years, I have been on a number of field trips, more than really I like to think about sometimes. And just about every time, somewhere, when we're pulling back from those long stretches, a chorus will rise up from the back of the bus. Because where you got a bunch of kids together, usually you've got happiness. And wherever you've got happiness, you've got singing. And God says, when you're cheerful, when you think about what I have done for you, let that be expressed in song. Again, note the interconnection between our faith and that idea of a happy heart. And I would say as well, in our relationships with brethren, we find that also. And we think about what's said over in Romans chapter 12 and verse 8. Here Paul is going through one of his list of things that we need to consider, things we need to think about. And he says down in verse 8, tying in with some of the themes we've looked at already, "He who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows with mercy, with cheerfulness." What? He's saying in your relationship with your brethren, whatever that brings, whatever you need to have, let it be done with a cheerful heart. You see, when you and I have a heart that's merry and happy, we're looking for opportunities to build each other up. We're looking for opportunities to encourage. A merry heart is the one that opens the doors of hospitality. And it's with this that we have the kind of attitude towards our brethren, not that we want to berate and be critical and tear down, but rather to build and to give. And to edify. That's what a merry heart will do. And we could go on, couldn't we? We could look and see how that most every aspect of our worship, both collectively and individually, and in the sense of just what we do in our lives, is tied directly into the idea of having a cheerful and merry heart. So the question is your heart merry? And is your spirit optimistic? Because the only right answer to that must be yes. Not a false sense. Not a sense of ignoring. Not a sense of pretending. Not a sense of escaping. But rather saying, I can face anything that comes my way. And I can do it with a happy heart. Not because of the circumstances at hand. But because I know there's a God in heaven. And that God is my God. Thank you for your good attention this morning. Go ahead and get your songbooks out and turn to the number that's been announced. This morning, if you're not a Christian, you don't know true happiness. If you're not a Christian, you don't know what it means to be cheerful in a real sense. Because what you've based your cheerfulness, your happiness on thus far is simply transient. It's going away. True happiness is built on the anchor, on the rock. And this morning, if you're not a Christian, God would welcome you into His family. He would be happy about it. And certainly, you will come to understand that peace that passes all understanding. To understand the happiness that you can have as a Christian. Maybe you've known that. Maybe you've allowed that to be lost. Maybe you've allowed Satan to deceive and to tempt you in different directions. God will welcome you back. If there's anything we can do this morning to aid you in that, won't you come as we stand and sing together?